Glenn North, the Poet Laureate of Kansas City's 18th and Vine Historic Jazz District, is also a community organizer and educator. He's been an important presence at the American Jazz Museum, the Black Archives of Mid-America, and now at the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Heritage Center and Museum. Today, New Letters on the Air, produced by New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, features part of his 2017 Kansas City Public Library reading from his poetry book, City of Song, along with excerpts from the I Have a Dream project, his collaboration with jazz great Bobby Watson, honoring Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Angela Elam, and here's poet Glenn North.
I wanted to start off with a poem that I wrote for a workshop that I was conducting, talking about the politics of our names, how sometimes even when you apply for a job, if your name is John Smith as opposed to Jamal, your application might receive more consideration. Does your name, in fact, have an impact on who you are as a person? And so when we were discussing this presentation that coincides with Black History Month, the thing that came most naturally to my mind was what it means to be a Black poet. You feel a responsibility to be a voice for the Black community. So even in this poem where I'm talking about my name, I felt the responsibility of mentioning Terrence Crutcher and Keith Scott and other men who currently don't have a voice because they were murdered by the police. So we'll just start here. It's called My Name Is. My name is Glenn Albert North Jr., named after my father, of course. All my relatives say I look just like him, although I vowed to never be like him. The night 42 years ago, he packed his things and split as my sister and I watched from the window until his tailgates disappeared into the cold night air. When I was 13, I learned that my name, a transliteration from the Gaelic language, means valley or spacious grassy area, which to my way of thinking is a lot like me. Yes, to my way of thinking, I am much like a low-lying patch of infinite emerald green where shepherds can feed their flocks, where lonely travelers descending from the far-flung hills can find comfort and rest, which is to say, I'm a pretty laid-back type of guy. Yes, my name sits soft on the tongue, fits in your mouth like a warm spring rain that coaxes dandelions to burst through the top layer of soil, stemming a million tiny suns. My name is Louise North, the grandmother who taught me to spill my blood as sacrificial ink on countless blank pages so that the world would never forget that I was here. My name is Keith Scott. My name is Terrence Crutcher. My name is the name of every Black boy, every Black man murdered at the hands of melanin-deficient cowards fearing the rise of a Black planet. My name is Legion. My name is the roar of distant thunder, the defiant chant of brown protesters filling city streets, the jubilant chorus of hymns piercing the roof of the cathedral. My name is this body I offer as a living sacrifice to a jealous God who will exact his wrath on all those who foolishly believe that justice will be limited to this world. So that's my name is. I've been very involved in things that have been happening on 18th and Vine for the past 20 years. I started back in 1997 hosting an open mic poetry series called Verbal Attack. And we started in the 18th and Vine area because that's when the renovation effort started, and we wanted to be a part of that. And we called the event Verbal Attack because we wanted it to be a space where poets, performers, hip-hop artists understood that we wanted to use art to create a movement, that there was an element of social consciousness there. And at that point, I had no plans on having a career as a poet. I just knew that there needed to be a space where poets could be heard. But shortly thereafter, people in the community began asking me to do workshops with young people. I started getting invitations to do commissioned work, and word of mouth just really helped things to take off, and it changed the trajectory of my career. So fast forward to about 8 years ago, there was a woman at the Nelson who worked in the education department, and she was very excited about their new Sparks collection of contemporary art that they were about to open to the public, and she wanted to try something new. And she gave me a call and she said, "Glenn, you know, I've heard a lot of good things about you, and I wanted to know if you've ever done any work with ekphrastic poetry." And I said, "Yes, of course." And I'm at my computer looking up what the heck is ekphrastic poetry, because at that point I didn't know. It's poetry that's written in response to visual art or visual image, photography, or what have you. And she wanted me to come in and to do a workshop. And I had done workshops for different organizations in the city, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I'd been in detention centers. I'd been in jails. And so there was a very lengthy process that I had to go through that made me feel initially unwelcome. There was a sense of, would this be happening if I was a white artist, in terms of some of the hoops I was asked to jump through? I had to sit in front of several different committees explaining what the workshop was going to be about, really kind of defend my pedigree. And at one point, I was almost like, never mind. But eventually, I jumped through all the hoops, and we had the workshop. And I wanted to do something special. And so as I was also working on my own art, I came across this painting called Lynch Family. And it's a painting that still hangs in the modern art section of the Nelson. And it's a beautiful painting. And it was done by a Jewish painter named Joseph Hirsch. And it's a black woman, and she's obviously distraught. And she's holding this baby, and the baby's shaking this rattle, and he's looking upset as well. And the background of the painting is this very deep, dark blue. But the title gives you everything you need to know to understand the painting. And it's called Lynch Family. So you immediately know that this is a woman who's lost her husband to a lynching. And obviously that resonated with me. And so I sat there with that painting and was able to construct this poem. And this poem kind of became the linchpin for the workshop that I eventually facilitated. And the workshop went very well and things moved forward. And now I love the Nelson, and they've certainly moved in a different direction in terms of inclusivity. But anyway, if you're ever at the Nelson, go to the modern art section. There's a painting called Lynch Family, and this poem was inspired by that. Went out swinging last night, baby. Hope you didn't wait up for me. Said I was swinging all night, baby. Did you stay up late for me? I wasn't swinging in no joint, darling. I was out on the limb of a tree. Now I'm walking on air, baby. Feels almost like I'm free. My feet steady kicking the wind. Yeah, I'm close to being free. And for the first time in my life, baby, white folks is looking up to me. Listen, son, your daddy loves you. Keep hanging on to hope. You the man of the house now. Gotta help your mama cope. Daddy won't be coming home no more. You see, I reached the end of my rope. And that's the Lynch Family Blues.
And that's Glenn North at the Kansas City Public Library reading from his 2015 book, City of Song.
Eventually, Stephanie Knapp, who's the curator of the Modern Art Gallery at the Nelson, said, "I think that poem belongs here, next to the Lynch Family painting." So it is now on a placard at the Nelson. Who would have known when I was sitting in front of that panel and they were making me feel this small that one day my work would be hanging in the Nelson. All right, so another thing is that as a black poet, especially a black man, I certainly feel that it is important to invest in the lives of young black men, and I've tried to do that. You know, I was raised right off of 51st and Paseo. I grew up in what eventually became a pretty rough neighborhood. I always had friends who lived a certain kind of life and always wanted those guys in my life, because you never know who you might need to have your back, you know what I'm saying? But my parents were always very supportive. They always encouraged me to pursue an education. And so although I lived in what some would consider a pretty difficult neighborhood, I really didn't have a difficult life. And so when I began working with youth who had been incarcerated, youth who had had a very different kind of an upbringing, I was very nervous about my ability to be able to relate to them. And what I quickly found out is, number one, a lot of those young men are no different from me. I did a lot of the stuff, you know, I just didn't get caught and become a part of the system. Many of them are very brilliant, very creative. And so there was this program that was developed called Sentence to the Arts that was designed to help young people who had been incarcerated get involved in community-based art projects that would take time either off their sentence or off their probation. And I thought it was a great program, became involved with it. We set up to do it over the course of the summer. On 39th and Prospect, we picked that corner because at that point, I was one of the most crime-ridden corners in Kansas City at the time. We set up a stage. We had artists from various disciplines. So every weekend that the students who were participating would come, they had an option to either dance, they could paint. We were painting murals. They could do spoken word with me. They could do hip hop. You know, we'd go down there, we'd clean up the neighborhood, we'd play music, you had kids painting. And the hope was that we could inject some beauty and hope into this neighborhood that had been overlooked. And so it went very well in the broad scheme of things, but the group of young men that I had the opportunity to work with did not quite get it. You know, we were very close to where they lived, and so a lot of their friends would come through and there would be a lot of posturing. They'd sneak off. It would be really hard for me to corral them. And so I was really getting frustrated. But over the course of the summer, as I got to know more about their experiences, it became evident to me why they had made some of the choices that they made. And in response to that, I wrote this poem called The Prodigal Poem. This poem was unwanted. This poem is illegitimate. This poem was an accident. I didn't mean to write it. Yes, I let my pen touch the pad, but I was just scribbling, just doodling, just playing around with it like so many other poets before me. See, I thought the paper was on the pill, so I didn't use any protection. No correction tape, no whiteout, no eraser. I wanted to have it aborted, but by the time I had saved up enough loot, it had already reached its third stanza. The paper won't consent to an ink test, so I'm not claiming it. However, I see it hanging out in the hood sometimes. This poem lets its word sag so you can see it's behind. This poem wasn't raised right. It can barely even rhyme. This poem hangs out with weed papers and it drinks too much wine. This poem will be dead before it reaches its 21st line, crumpled up in some waste basket next to a suicide letter, or tragically executed by a heartless paper shredder. At the very least, it'll end up locked behind the bars of some legal pad, and it'll be too late then to blame it on Dad, whoever that may be. No, this poem won't end happily. It's already lost touch with reality. Heavily influenced by BET, it's caught up in some warped hip-hop fantasy. It denies the genre to which it belongs. This poem thinks it is a rap song. P to the Izzo, E to the Ism, that's the anthem, get all your hands up. This poem will never be published, revised, or anthologized. This poem will never reside on a library shelf because this poem is illiterate. It can't even read itself. This poem can never be a real love poem. It's too busy trying to be a Mac Daddy poem, but countless careless encounters have made it a that's just my baby's daddy poem. And it has left fatherless verses in journals and notebooks all over town. With each passing line, it sinks further down. Now Job, Psalms, Proverbs, and not just these, but Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon yearned for this poem to follow them, these prophetic poems that foretold of the coming Messiah and the glory of the New Jerusalem, reached out to this poem, prayed for this poem, loved this poem. But some poems just don't want to be saved. They just crash and burn at the bottom of the page. That's The Prodigal Poem.
From the book City of Song, you're listening to New Letters on the Air with community activist, educator, and poet Glenn North.
That group of young men that I worked with, I'm not sure exactly what the future held in store for them, but in subsequent work that I did with adjudicated youth, just sharing that poem has given me a license, if you will, to connect with them and for them to be vulnerable with me, because I think even though I might not have shared the same experiences that they had, they know that this poem says something, it resonates with them. And so I thank those young men for giving me this poem so that I was more effective later on in terms of doing that kind of work. I was recently appointed the Poet Laureate of the 18th and Vine Historic District. And yeah. That just gives me more support in terms of things that I've been doing all along. For instance, the Louder Than a Bomb Youth Poetry Festival kicked off in the Crossroads. I'm one of the organizers of that. But it's the Jazz Museum that's hugely supportive, and it's a citywide youth poetry festival where students from various high schools are competing, much like you would have in like a debate tournament. So the finals will be at the Gym Theater. It's awesome just to see busloads of children with signs like you would see at a football game coming to support their respective teams at a spoken word poetry event. It's incredible. I had an opportunity to do a recording with Bobby Watson. He's the director of jazz studies at UMKC. Back in 2013, we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and Bobby decided he wanted to do a recording project that would commemorate that. He wanted to talk about, you know, we always hear the I have a dream part of the speech. That's the really palatable part of the speech. If you go back and read that speech and you look at the first half, Dr. King talks about the people who had assembled that day being there to get America to make good on a promissory note that they had written 100 years prior. The 40 acres and a mule, real emancipation. So it was a lot about reparations when you really examine it. He was talking about police brutality. You know, he was talking about a lot of things that are still going on today, but you don't hear people talking about that half of the speech. And so he came up with this idea to call the project Check Cashing Day. We're here to make good on that promissory note you wrote back in 1863. And Bobby was originally going to use snippets from Dr. King's speeches, but decided that it might give the album more resonance if he had a spoken word piece on there. So he asked me to compose something for the title track, Check Cashing Day. And then he was like, hey, man, that was pretty cool. He's like, I got this other track, and we write a poem to that. And by the time it was done, I had written 7 new poems as a part of that project. But one of the things I'd like to do as the Poet Laureate is to take that project and give it some educational components where Bobby could perhaps do some master classes. I could talk about the poems and the traditions that I was inspired by as I was doing the work in conjunction with Bobby, and to do some more performances of that, because I don't think it ever quite got the attention that it deserved. And although we've moved beyond the 50th anniversary, a lot of the things that we were talking about on that project are still very relevant and still need to be discussed. But anyway, I thought, you know, it'd be cool to share that poem.
210 years ago, Martin shared his dream for justice to roll down like a mighty stream. A dream rooted in reality, and the solemn prospect that he had come to the nation's capital to cash a 100-year-old check. Like so many folks in the hood with bills stacked high enough for a bungee cord jump, anxiously looking forward to the first of the month, with 300,000 black voices demanding their pay, August 28th, 1963 was Check Cashing Day. And while America had sufficient currency in her bloated account, and black folks were only requesting a fair amount, like frogs playing basketball on a rubber court, the check still bounced. The first of the month has passed 600 times since Martin uttered those exalted lines, I have a dream. Hold that phrase in such high esteem, but there was another Martin who also dreamed. His name was Trayvon, and along with a bag of Skittles and a bottle of tea, his dreams were buried. 6 feet deep. Slavery never really ended. It just changed forms from sharecropping to wage restrictions to welfare moms. As Martin declared in reference to so-called emancipation in 1863, 150 years later, the Negro is still not free. A brother finally made it to the White House, but even a black president cannot correct the problem of over 1 million black men in the prison industrial complex. Or how, like so many autumn leaves, bodies of brown boys pile up in city streets. Yes, the new Jim Crow has enormous wings and he loves to fly off with colored dreams. But back in 63, Martin also penned these lines. Justice too long delayed is justice denied. And don't label me an angry black man, because believe you me, I understand. When we follow the vision of Dr. King, white folks are full partners in the dream. But in our nation's attempt to fix the problem of race, you ain't never gonna fix what you can't face. So listen up, Uncle Sam. Here we stand with this 150-year-old check in our tired black hands. There's nothing else to talk about, nothing left to say, but cough it up, America. It's check cashing day.
Poet Glenn North with Bobby Watson and the I Have a Dream Project. For links, go to newletters.org. Check Cashing Day also appears in the book City of Song. Now back to the Kansas City Public Library with Glenn North, who was a 2009 winner of the Charlotte Street Foundation's Generative Performing Artist Award.
I was also the recipient of the Kavi Kanem Fellowship. Kavi Kanem is an organization of black poets who are doing incredible things. Just Google Kavi Kanem, it'll blow your mind. The organization, the people that are affiliated with it. So to become a Kavi Kanem Fellow was a huge deal on a national scale. Locally, Charlotte Street, that same year, happened. And I just have to be honest, it was validation. It was like, okay, somebody really sees the work that I'm doing and appreciates it. There's a cash award that comes along with it that's unrestricted, which is very cool. That was the second summer I coached Kansas City's youth poetry slam team. So the team that wins Louder Than a Bomb that I was talking about earlier, we take them to a national competition called Brave New Voices. And I had enough money in my pocket to make sure the students were taken care of, you know, we could eat at restaurants and have a good time on that trip. And it, in terms of my opportunities to work with other institutions, changed other institutions' perception of me. To say that I'm a Charlotte Street Fellow really resonates with people. And so I've been very grateful for that opportunity, because the work that has come my way since then has been really great. And so, you know, I'm at a point in my career where I'm really trying to be more intentional about who I am as an artist and really making sure that I'm hustling forward and not backwards. Not just being busy, but being productive and really nurturing myself so that I can create better art. Being the 18th of my poet laureate, I figured it only fitting to end with this piece that I wrote for 18th and Vine. You know, Kansas City has this incredible history that we don't fully celebrate. Kansas City was an epicenter for the evolution of jazz music. 1920s, 1930s, this was like a huge laboratory, and all the greats knew that they had to travel here if they really wanted to be considered authentic. This is the town that produced Charlie Parker, Big Joe Turner. His recording of a song called Shake, Rattle, and Roll, some say, was the beginning of rock and roll. Some would argue that rock and roll was born in Kansas City. And so we have to really celebrate that legacy. The 18th and Vine area has done some incredible things. There's still a lot of work to be done. So this poem kind of speaks to what we would hope to see happen, and it's called revival.
There is a place where parched lips kiss warped reeds and cramped fingers stroke strings and keys, filling the air with melodies. And resurrected rhapsodies capture the cadence of ancient chants, where shackles are removed and our ancestors dance in anticipation of liberty. And every note that's played is dedicated to their memory. There is a place where each heartache and every sharp pain can be soothed and smoothed by a medicinal refrain. The story of King David makes it plain. And it came to pass that when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took a harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. You see, this divinely inspired requiem came forth from a glorious past, and although it defies description, we choose to call it jazz. And ever since this magical music emerged from space and time, it has found a permanent residence on 9+9 and Vine. Someday soon you'll travel there to escape from cell phones and emails and faxes, from being overworked and underpaid and paying too many taxes. This is the place where even struggle kicks off his shoes and relaxes. And the only war that will ever take place is the battle of the Saxes. This is the place where jazz is served up as a sensual delight, and it smells like grandmother's chitlins, cause she always cooks them just right. And it tastes like the peach cobbler she bakes that gets better with every bite. And it looks like Susanna Jones when she wears that red dress. Lord, what a beautiful sight. And it feels like love's very first kiss, shared in the soft moonlight. And it sounds like Bobby Watson, cool on a blue Friday night, or like Gabriel's trumpet at the rapture, just before we take flight. So these ministers of music are awaiting your arrival, wanting to provide you with orchestral comfort as you witness the revival. Because jazz, like matter, can't be destroyed, it only changes forms. And the historic intersection of 18th and Vine is where jazz will be reborn. Then we will cherish this noble noise and glow in the cool of its heat, as the caramel-coated cacophony provides a sonically hypnotic beat that can only ever be heard through the tapping soles of the feet. And as willing slaves to the rhythm, our freedom will be complete.
Revival from Bobby Watson and the I Have a Dream Project. The poem also appears in Glenn North's book, City of Song, re-released in 2019 by Spartan Press. Links to that and the complete Kansas City Public Library presentation are at newletters.org. Today's show with the Poet Laureate of 18th and Vine and now Executive Director of the Bruce R. Watkins Center was produced with Ashley Cote, Natalie Stein, and Jamie Walsh. From UMKC, I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.